Welcome to Northern Goal, the football podcast from the Evening Express and Press and Journal. Today, I'm joined by Paul Third and Callum Law to interrogate our latest guest, who is none other than Peterhead's Jamie Stevenson. Jamie, first of all, do we call you Jamie or do we call you Ted?
You can choose, it doesn't bother me.
How did you get that nickname in the first place?
I've missed this, I was waiting to say.
Basically, when we'd won the league with Morton, going through the airport, some of the boys in duty free had a wee bit too much to drink. So I was kind of a wee bit sober. So I said to the boys, right, you don't need your passports, give me them, I'll look after them, sort of thing. And Ryan Harden turned around and just said, you're such a Ted. Just letting off over their best interest. And ever since it stopped, and that was, what, 11, 12 years ago?
It's haunted you ever since.
I did at first. I wasn't even, but now it's just second nature to me. I just answer anything, kind of sums me up, doesn't it?
So
there's certainly worse nicknames anyway.
Jamie, you began your career in the youth ranks at Aberdeen. How did you end up at Pittodrie?
I played with a Glasgow select when I was 11, and there was a scout there, Vince Morton. I don't even know who he was, but he seen me playing with Glasgow schools and invited me kind of along a trial kind of thing at Hamilton Palace with John Ward. So it was kind of a Tuesday, Thursday at the time. So it kind of worked around boys club. This was before pro youths. So I went there for a wee while, and then I got offered schoolboy forms, I think when I was 12, 13. And ever since then, that was it. I agreed to sign the schoolboy form. So it was every holiday up to Pittodrie, Easter, summer holidays, October week, spending a week up there with Drew Jarvie, Chick McClellan. So it was good. So every holiday we were up there, it was like a wee week away. I'm sure my mum and dad were happy about it, getting peace and quiet for me.
Chick and Drew must have been something special for you, Jamie.
Aye, they were training with good. It was always a good laugh, especially, I think, Drew was from Airdrie, wasn't he? And Chick was from down south as well. So they got on really well with the boys from the central belt and down in the west. So it was good. It was a good football education as well. And a lot of good boys I met through that too. So it was a good time.
What sort of guys were in your sort of squad at that time, Jamie? Who are the sort of names that were kicking about at that time?
It would have been Scott Morrison, Xander Diamond, trying to think, boy, Carl McCarty, Murray Watson, Alan Carella. I'm trying to think of boys that went on and played. Chris Clark and that was just a couple of years above us. Ross O'Donoghue, kind of boys that were chatting on the door of the first team, Darren Mackey. So I was a year or 2 years below the team that won the BP Youth Cup. So I was just kind of the next batch under that. So it was a right good youth setup. Aberdeen have always brought through players. So it was a good football education.
I suppose it must have been, Ken, you're speaking about a good youth setup. It must have been to a good standard in that as well, Jamie, with some of the players you're mentioning in that sort of side.
No, it was. I mean, that was at the time that the boys would have played the game on the Tuesday with under-18s. I think it was a Friday at 2 o'clock. They used to play the games, and then they used to have the reserves on the Monday night. So they kind of got to play quite a lot of football, and that's when the reserves were first-team players maybe coming back for injury and not quite involved, but you were playing with them on a Monday, and you got a good experience through that, and obviously just trying being around with the first team whenever you could, it was good.
Jamie, the players that were really good at the time and when you first came into the Aberdeen setup, were they the ones that made it? Were the ones that you expected to make it at first team level? Were they the ones that did make it at first team level, or was it sort of the ones that were maybe the quieter ones that you weren't really expecting it from?
I think the boys just work hard, and maybe a few of them got the chance, maybe injuries in the first team, maybe the managers brought them up, and they've seen something in training that they've liked, and then there's probably been players that I thought were like outstanding, and they just, injuries and stuff, and then things away for the game that they just didn't make it. I mean, I get like go by Aberdeen when I was like 16, 17, and even a few of the boys that went on to do YTS, a lot of them weren't even involved in football by the time it came around 21, 22, so I think it's just a wee bit of luck, but obviously you need to have ability and obviously work as hard as you can, and sometimes you just need a wee chance. Some boys maybe get it, some boys maybe need to go to another club or go down a level to go back, but the ones that you could see at that time who had ability was Scott Morrison, the left back. He had a great left foot on him. And you knew Alexander Diamond, he would tackle a brick wall, and he could hit a brick wall, he'd win everything. And you knew, but you know what I mean, as that type of player, yeah. you just knew that he was gangly, and he was just, you could say with a ball, he was maybe not the best, but see, as a defender, he was really good. You just knew he had a chance. Mm-hmm.
You speak about getting let go there, Jamie, and I suppose, what was the sort of feeling like at the time? Maybe disappointment, but you also pleased, you know, you've still, from that, forged out a good career in the game.
Oh, at the time, I was gutted, so I was, I think, more so for my dad as well. He'd put a lot of time and effort and money travelling all over the place with my football, and the way it all came about was I got let go on a car park in Livingston after being there for so long. It was, at the time, obviously, I was ready to walk away from the game, but I kind of had enough of it. But Hugh McCann phoned me and asked me would I go to Ottawa, because Hugh was at Aberdeen. He took his under 16 for the first year at Pro Youth. He went to Ottawa and said, come to Ottawa, see how you like it. And from then on, I started enjoying it again. So that's how I kind of ended up at Ottawa.
Obviously, Jamie, you then, when you're at Ottawa, go on holiday to yep. Mallorca. I'm sure you knew we'd ask you about this. There's been many versions of this story told over the years. What yeah. What is the real story from your perspective?
I've got family that live there, and my cousin's playing a kind of, it's like a local league, and just asked us to play on a Sunday. So we down and played, and just boy was there, was like a kind of done work for Mallorca at the time, and seeing I was, cause at that time I was still quite small and thin frame, but had a wee bit of ability and nippy and stuff like that. Me and my dad normally play for Megs, so that was it. It just says, do you play a level? You're a good player, good technical ability. And at first we thought it was a bit of a wind up, but it turned out the club got in contact with Arlo and asked, could I go over for a trial? So I went over for a trial, I think it was like start of November maybe. So Arlo, I was nowhere near the first team at Arlo to play in. I was playing odd game and training with them and stuff like that, because at the time I was still quite small. And then all of a sudden, once Arlo, Mallorca were interested in a trial, Terry Christie threw him in the first team against Inverness Carlow, who were going for the league at the time. And even then, I was all right, but you could tell I was still a mile away from playing with grown men, even at that age. So I went on trial. He was trying to bump the price up a wee bit in case he offered me something. So I was there for a week, and at the time I was an apprentice mechanic, so I had to take holidays. And then after, I think it was 3 or 4 days, they says, can I stay for another week? So I stayed for another week, trained, and then says, can you stay for another week? Move me up to the B team, you see how I'd feature against them. I'd done alright in a couple of the games. And then they offered me a deal. So then it was just a case of them buying me off an hour asking for money, and then come January, that was me, I'd left. I was away to Spain on a 2.5 year deal.
It must feel, for a young lad as you were at that time, it's like a fairy tale. What's happening here?
No, it was so surreal. It all happened so quickly. And when I got there, it was just trying to get a phone and trying to get a car. And it's the first time I'd kind of flew the nest as well, and I was kind of on my own, standing on 2 feet, and I just, to be fair, at first I did struggle a wee bit trying to get the language, the culture. The only thing that didn't bother me was the weather, but it was just kind of so surreal. And at the time, obviously, I was part time working a garage in Kirkintilloch, and kind of all of a sudden I'm playing football for a living, and you're looking across to our pitch and there's players that have played at World Cups. And at the time, Mallorca were a Champions League team, so it was a big deal.
So, Jamie, who you speak about players at World Cups, now, who were the sort of guys that you were seeing, you know, in training and that at Mallorca at that time?
In the first team, there was Leo Franco, Walter Pandiani, Samuel Eto'o, Miguel Nadal, a smaller player called Abigaza. It was just unbelievable. He was about 5'3", and the things he could do with a ball, it was ridiculous. There's probably the boy Riera that won the UEFA Cup with Liverpool. He was there. So quite a good team.
Whatever happened to those boys, eh?
I know, it's a hard life, isn't it?
Were you actually getting to play against them in any games in training, or basically,
yeah,
how good were those players?
I quite often on a Tuesday, because the way it was there, it was the youth team, the B team, and the first team. Like at the time in Scotland, the first team could go back down to the B team. Sorry, the first team could come play in the reserves, but in Spain you couldn't. So it was good that when you were in the B team, that's it. You played in the World Leagues in Spain, and then every Tuesday, the manager always liked to do his shape against the B team to try some things out. Because it was a decent standard. You could see that they were obviously a level above, but it gave the players a good, like any other club, it gave the manager food for thought as to try certain things. He would say to us, we want you to play a certain system against, like the way the team would play on a Saturday, and he would just try a few things. So that was kind of every Tuesday or Wednesday, he would do that. So we would always be flung in against the first team. So it was a good experience.
Jamie, I know it was mainly, was it the B team with Mallorca that you sort of played a lot for? Was that, you know, even in the lower leagues of Spain, was that a really good standard to play in and a good experience for you?
Yeah, so in Spain, you've basically got the two big leagues. You've got La Liga, and then you've got Segunda A, which is like the Spanish pro version of obviously championships, a level above that, but that's like their version of it. And then below that, you get Segunda B, but then it gets split off into, I think it's five different groups. So you're kind of playing maybe the third, fourth tier in Spain. So it was a good standard, but a lot of the lower leagues in Spain as well, it's the B teams from the big clubs that play in the leagues. So you're playing against maybe your Barcelona Bs, your Valencia Bs, but at the time you're also playing against like established like lower league teams in Spain. So it was good experience.
Can I as a follow up to that ask then? When you were playing those games and you were coming up against teams like Barcelona B and that were there, did you ever come up against players at a young age that are now total world superstars?
I would need to go back over soccer base or something to find out. But at the time, the only one I can remember off the top of my head was like, remember the boy Sergio Garcia?
Oh, yeah.
He was up front. He was kind of the boy Nano. Yeah, Iniesta, he was like the younger one. So it was good experience. Played in the Mane Stadium next to the new camp and stuff. So it was night and day to then 3-4 months later when I kind of had enough. I struggled a wee bit and just came home. And then I was, next thing I knew, I was back at Alloa. So that was that.
As readjustments go, it's got to be up there from Mallorca back to Alloa.
But at the time, I kind of struggled a bit because I was having family and friends come over kind of every other week when I was over there. And obviously, you know, the holiday season over there kind of dies September, October. I was on the phone every day, night to my dad. I was just struggling, so I was struggling, felt lonely. And at that time, I was doing a lot of travelling with the team and I wasn't involved in the squad. And I just, in hindsight, I should probably have stayed. But at that point in time, I was like struggling. I thought I'll get a flight home and see how I feel. Spoke to the manager, gave me a few days off. I came home and then my heart of hearts, I couldn't go back and do it. So I was struggling really badly. And at the time, Alan Kernaghan was the manager of Clyde. So I went and trained with Clyde over the Christmas period. And there was maybe a chance of going back to Clyde. That was the year they were flying in the first division. They nearly won it. And I didn't know at the time, but there was a release clause in my contract. I still had 2 years left in my deal in Spain. So they came to some sort of agreement that if they were going, they would give the money back to Alloa and I could go there. But I was more than happy because I'm back in Tom Henry at the time. And I thought if I could just try and get back, score a few goals, play a few games, I can hopefully try and get to a level in Scotland.
And that certainly turned out to be the case. I mean, when you look at your career in Scotland, you've got enough to show for it.
I've done all right. So I would have loved to have played a wee bit higher, but as things go, that's such as life. So I'm quite happy with the career I've had and still going at 35, so it's not too bad.
Is that the one thing, Jamie, when you maybe look back down the years, you hoped you'd maybe been full-time or even, you know, playing first division or top flight for maybe a periods of your career more than you did?
I played in the championship a few times for a few seasons. Played League One mostly. I think I've only played two, 3 years in League Two, third division at the time. And that was, I wouldn't have played at that level if it wasn't for Jim, to be honest with you, because Jim took me to Morton and I enjoyed my time playing for Jim, and I got a bad hamstring injury there. Then Jim left, Davy Arns came in, face didn't fit, back in Monty Alloa. But even the differences in the levels, there's quite a wee bit. But that is the only regret, that I never ever got to play at a higher level than the Championship, in the First Division.
Just going off script slightly, Jimmy, you mentioned him there, Jim McAnally. I mean, he's obviously signed you for three clubs. What is it about sort of playing for him that you enjoy?
It's just everything about it. It's he's a manager that essentially, obviously there's pressure to perform, but you don't feel as if it's shouting and bawling. You can go and express yourself, and he knows what you're capable of. I've got a good relationship with Jim, and obviously I know myself and I've known a great game. He knows, he'll just say, no, your usual standard sort of thing, but I've always enjoyed playing under him. I've enjoyed the training, and whenever I seem to go with Jim, I think we've only ever had like 1 year where we struggled, and that was that year at Peterhead. Every other time we've always either been at the playoffs, kind of maybe apart from this year, but we've always kind of been at the playoffs at the top of the league or going for a league, or he normally puts together good teams that boys enjoy playing with and enjoy travelling with each other. So it's always a good dressing room, and it's not like work, it's a hobby that we get paid to do, so we're fortunate in that sense.
Has he changed at all, Jimmy? Is he the same guy today that you first worked with at Morton?
Met Jim that many times. He's you know what I mean, what you see is what you get. He's off the cuff, and he'll not beat about the bush. He'll just, and you can talk away him, and you'll get problems, he'll phone him and have a wee discussion with you. So his door's always open for anybody. That's he's very approachable, and he'll know kind of, as I said, he'll not beat about the bush. Kind of, if you need an answer, he'll give you one, and if it's in your best interest, or whatever, he might say to you, maybe, I don't know, seek pastures new or something. But I've always been fortunate with Jim. Even the year we get relegated, I never had a great season personally, but he offered me another year, and ever since I think we've done all right. So
what I was going to say as well, Jamie, with you and Jim, is, I mean, obviously earlier in your career you were mainly sort of an attacking player, whether it was out wide or number 10 or that, but at Peterhead the last few years you found yourself playing sort of right and left back quite a lot. How have you found that change?
I don't know. I kind of try and just plug gaps, and I can use both feet and stuff to get and read the game. And fortunately, I've not lost too much of my pace, so I can. And I like to go on the ball and try and play. It's just one of those things. If he didn't think I could do it, he wouldn't have tried it in the first place. I think it was a game away to Stranraer. I was struggling for a right back. That was just before Cammy Kerr came in. Don't get me wrong, I've never been so nervous playing a football game in my life, playing it right back, having to tuck in, because I was normally just a go and play and express yourself sort of player, try and score goals, create chances. I never really thought too much defensively. It's turned it no bad, and I've kind of played there quite a few times since.
Jamie, you touched on some of the good times with Morton, some of the good times with Peterhead, but when you look back on your career as a whole, what have been the highlights for you?
Winning the league with Peterhead and winning the league with Morton's a two standout. There is games, don't get me wrong, that games will maybe be SPL teams and stuff like that, but also getting to the final with the Petrofac was a great achievement for a club like Peterhead to go to Hampden. And I think there must have been about 48,000 Rangers fans. I think it's the first time they've been at Hampden. There's been no segregation. That was a great day. It's always kind of been low leagues and trying to win leagues and being close, been in the playoffs a few times. We will be winning the two leagues and meeting a great bunch of boys that I'll probably keep in touch with for the rest of my life.
We've covered your period in Spain, Jamie. You said you shared pitches with some very famous names. I don't know when we'll get Samuel Eto'o ever mentioned on this podcast again. But in Scottish terms,
I'll get slaughtered for that, no doubt. Oh, there's Samuel Eto'o getting mentioned again. That was when at Morton when I went in and Dean Keenan would stitch me up. I'd walk in above my peg, I'd have Mallorca pictures and beach pictures and Samuel Eto'o pictures just taking them back out of me.
Aye, but you know you're the only guy sitting in that dressing room. They can take a mick all they want. It's still true.
Aye, I know. The only one I'll take off is Scotty. Scotty had a CIS Cup winners medal, so I can take it. I'll take it for him.
Looking in Scottish terms, you've played with quite a few guys that have gone on to top flight international football as well.
I think. Probably not at the level I've been at, but I mean, when we were at Morn with Paul McGowan, and one for Celtic. He's went on, had a good career in the SPL. There's been that many boys. Tony Watt, I used to pick him up to take him up to Airdrie.
You must have a few tales about Tony.
Tony is just, he's just what you see with Tony is what you get. He's a nice boy. I think he's probably been told that the first game of Airdrie, he got told to turn up smart casual. And he turned up in a pair of like flowery shorts and a jumper sort of thing with school bag on. And then all the managers were like, Tony, just like jeans and a jumper or something. But he's a great boy, so he is. And fingers crossed he can kick on at Motherwell and try and fulfil the potential for obviously Celtic and Charlton. And he's had a no bad couple of seasons, but I'm sure if he gets to sell as fit as he can, he'll fly up here.
Jamie, Gary McKay-Steven was obviously one that you played with at Airdrie as well, and we've seen a fair bit of him since then. What was he like at that time at Airdrie?
Training session, Jimmy Boyle brought him in, and we just looked at him, and kind of scraggly boy, long blonde hair, and we didn't really know much about him, and he got the ball in training and ran past three or four players, like just ridiculous pace. And then speaking to Jimmy, which is the case, he needs games. It's a kind of stepping stone. So obviously he knew a lot more about him than what we did. I think we played Dundee United that year in one of the cups, and he was a standout. And it was the same when we had that game away at Capo. They were in the league above, and he ripped them apart for a good portion of the game as well. So you could see that he had ability, and it was just getting fitness, getting his confidence. And once that came, he just knew he was going to. It was going to be a stepping stone for him at Airdrie, so he went to Dundee United, done well there. Then I don't think he got a really good chance at Celtic, but he's a quality player, and then obviously he went up to Aberdeen and done well up there.
Now he's sunning himself in New York too, eh?
Aye, well, living the life of luxury over there, you'd imagine. But even currently, Jamie, with sort of Peterhead, you know, you've played with some top players there, haven't you guys? Like Simon Ferry, Rory McAllister, players like that.
Aye, we've always had. Like even the year we got relegated, I still do not know how that happened. It's just we never won games, obviously, but we never get the points. But we've always had a solid squad of players. We've always had good players. Si's played at a good level down south. I mean, even we can't make any stuff alone. He's back at Dundee, playing the Premier League. Trying to get a few more. Rory, you know, everybody knows Rory scored an absolute barrel because I probably went to any club in the lower leagues a couple of seasons ago. Big Graham Smith as well, the goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. There's quite a few. A lot of the boys that have been there have, like Ryan Conroy, who's obviously there at the moment, wee Jack Leach and
Got him.
Scott Brown, obviously Bradford and St Johnstone. So
Gary McDonald as well. He wasn't with you for too long. I think it was your first season. He was there. He was another one had a good career.
He was great career. He's always played in the top league, scored goals, played Aberdeen, St Johnstone. Just, this is my end of my sixth season at Peterhead. Probably, I think me and Ennett Sy, the longest serving so far. So it's quite a big turnover of boys. But it's always been the managers always brought in quality. It's been really good. Met a lot of nice people and stuff like that.
We mentioned Rory there. How's that readjustment been for the team with him obviously moving on to Cove?
I think the team obviously, Rory has been, well, ever since I've been at Peterhead, he's always been the focal point. The team scores goals, penalty taker, just good about the changing room. So it was a bit strange. It just happened really, really quickly. It just came in one week, and then before you knew it, he'd signed, a 3-year deal with Cove. But even this season, as a team, we've struggled to score goals. So Rory left and we brought in wee Boydie and stuff like that. And it's just trying to create chances to score goals. And I don't know, obviously, what would happen the rest of the league this year. What's happened with the coronavirus and stuff like that. But it's... It was strange at the time, because you're used to him just being bubbly about the changing room. In training is always somebody I spoke to. It was strange.
Obviously, Jamie, we can get on to in a minute how your season ended and how the season ended for all the other lower league teams. But just, I suppose, just touching back on what we were talking about 2 minutes ago, who would you say, if you had to name one player who was the most talented, most naturally gifted player you've played with, who would you say it was? You can't say yourself.
No, maybe, anyway. Naturally gifted player. Put me in the spot. Can we come back to that? I'll try and think.
Okay, you can leave that for a little...
That's a wee teaser for the end.
A teaser for the end.
Okay, so next up then we'll discuss the latest developments in Scottish football, and of course there have been more farcical goings on in the last week. Last night it was announced that Rangers, Hearts and Stranraer will get their wish of a extraordinary general meeting between the SPFL clubs. The aim of that is, driven by Rangers, is to get a new investigation on just what went on with the vote to end the lower league season and sort of leave the Premiership season without hanging over it should the games not be played. Rangers have promised that their dossier of evidence that paints a negative picture of the SPFL's handling of the situation will be in the public domain, or at least shared among the clubs before that meeting on May 12th. Obviously, on Friday, the Deloitte carried out an investigation on the events of specifically April 10th, when Dundee's vote went missing, which told us really nothing new about how the Dundee vote had found its way into the junk folder, and then Dundee had said not to consider it cast before then voting yes a few days later. But guys, it's just the latest happening in a farcical and endless situation, isn't it?
Oh, well, for me, a vote going into a junk folder is peak Scottish football. It is just incredible. I mean, you can hear it. We can all listen to this and go, oh, surely. But then when you get a proper investigation and we come back to, yes, this actually happened. Somebody had to go and look in the junk folder and go, oh, there it is. It's just incredible. Incredible. As for an EGM, I don't know. What's the point? Is it going to change your vote if we're on it again?
For me, Thirdy, the thing with the EGM, I think, and potentially a fresh investigation, the thing that, in my opinion, needs to be answered in some way, which the Deloitte investigation didn't answer, is why Dundee were allowed to change their vote, and what discussions did the SPFL have with Dundee, and what discussions did Dundee have with other clubs in the period between the Friday and the Wednesday when they eventually cast their vote as yes?
Do we honestly think? Here's my take. I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters, because as we've seen, and Scott Gardner of Cali Thistle admitted this on the radio, clubs, I think his own club, Inverness, Dundee, and Partick had all been talking before the vote and coming up with agreements on how they were going to vote before the cast is. So what difference does it make if it happened before 5 o'clock or after 5 o'clock? That's my personal opinion. Everyone was trying to sway another club to get their vote in, which whatever to suit whatever their agenda was. I don't think it mattered about the deadline passing. The only issue I have is why announce the state of play before all the votes were cast?
I know, should have been a sealed vote.
Yeah.
Everybody put your votes in sealed and then here's the results.
Announce the results once everyone's voted, as opposed to before everyone's voted. Yep.
That's how I see it too. That's the only issue I have, is why announce a vote when they're not all in?
I understand what you're saying, but I think, and maybe this has been overlooked, but I think for the credibility of Scottish football and the people running the SPFL, as much as anything, it would be of a benefit if we actually were able to find out the ins and outs of what I spoke about earlier, just for transparency, really. But I know everyone's got different opinions on that.
Yeah, so we're never going to have, it would appear, a clear opinion on this, what happened with the vote. And I don't, to my mind, we won't ever have probably a clear outcome from an investigation that suits everyone. However, back to more important matters, perhaps, whether the game can restart with the Premiership fixtures can be completed in the coming months. Obviously, there's been a development with that as well, in the sense that England have now got players back to individual training on their training grounds. Derek McInnes quoted this morning, the Aberdeen manager, is saying that if England manage to get back to playing, and England aren't there yet, but if they get back to playing, that opportunity shouldn't be sort of denied to the Scottish top flight teams just because of finances. My opinion on that, right out of the gate, as you guys probably know already, is that it's all about the finances. The finances have to be the key concern when you consider that Premier League teams in England with massive training grounds are having to limit one player to a pitch. They're probably having to test players frequently to a level that's going to cost a heap of money. And that's not even considering when games get going and they're talking about isolating whole squads and all the matchday staff and hotels, all the journalists, all the TV production staff, how you keep these people away from each other, apart from when they're on the pitch, but how you stop the virus or spreading between them all. It just seems unfeasible, doesn't it, for that to be implemented in Scotland, given the lack of money in the Scottish game?
At all level, I mean, a lot of the income is through supporters and hospitality and stuff. I mean, the level we play, it's no millions and millions. It's not even thousands to players. Do you know, it's just, for most, it's a second job. And fortunate enough, we get paid some more than others. But the clubs couldn't survive. And the clubs wouldn't have survived that long on handouts for SFAs, for other, I know FIFA, they had an emergency fund. But how much of that actually filters down to like a part-time club in Scotland? Even in Scotland, I mean, I don't know where they stand with the Sky deal at the moment, because they don't even know when the season's going to finish.
Even the top flight, Jamie, the clubs rely on supporter income. And if you're playing games behind closed doors, then you're basically running these matches at a loss. It just doesn't seem like something that would be sustainable to complete the season that way for Scottish football.
It's not. I mean, I know Rangers have got an issue with Celtic and stuff like that. I mean, not for where I look at it, I mean, the only clubs I think could really have at this moment in time be aggrieved is maybe Partick Thistle with their game in hand. And if they won that, they're not getting relegated. Falkirk, a point behind Raith Rovers, but they've accepted it. I think for everybody, the sooner we can draw a line and try and maybe at least plan for next year, then it would help massively, because at every level, you don't even know what the league structure is going to be. Managers aren't going to have a budget. You don't even know if they're going to be playing again next year. So for the likeliness is a few boys might never even play at a level again, because that's it, finished. So we'll see what happens. Just, but even the Premier League club, sorry.
No, you finished. Sorry, that's me cutting that.
No, I'm just saying that. I mean, just, you'll know more about Aberdeen, Callum, because obviously you do a lot of reporting for them and stuff up there. But apart from even Celtic, Rangers, Aberdeen, there's financially, it would affect everybody massively. So I don't know where we go from here.
What I was going to say about the finances as well, and even getting individual tests to test players or staff or that, as they're doing down in England, an individual test is somewhere in the region of £350 to £400 in cost. So it's realistically, the amount of tests that would need to be done, it seems like a non-starter, really, for Scotland. And the other thing as well, even you mentioned, Jamie, next season and planning, there's talk of potentially starting next season, it could be behind closed doors, which again, for Premiership clubs right the way down, that's a non-starter as well, really, isn't it?
It is. I mean, no other thing you could do is but fans pay a subscription to watch games, but fans like going to games. They like going to put a belt on, getting a programme, getting something to eat, taking their boy, going with their dad. It's, and girls as well, obviously. But it is. It's just that when you've grew up and you've done that with your dad, your granddad, whatever, it's not going to be the same sitting in a house, having to watch a game, you know yourself, Callum, if you're having to do a match report and you're sitting watching it and having to rewind it to see things and then doing interviews over Skype and stuff, it's not sustainable.
I know we're going to come on to maybe what the future holds and size of the leagues and what have you in a second here, but I mean, there was a report come out in one newspaper in England today that basically said you're looking at a $4 million bill for testing for the Premier League clubs alone in England, which is what, £200,000 per club? To translate that to Scottish terms, there's no chance. How many clubs can afford that sort of outlay to play 8 games? None.
Celtics, you're only one that might even be able to afford it.
It's pie in the sky. That's what it is.
The money in England just is far superior. So I think they may be hoping just to get this season finished and then try and kind of reevaluate where they are. If they can get the season finished, I mean, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that Liverpool have won the league, but it's just the Champions League places. I mean, the money down there is astronomical compared to every other league in the world. So play that to an end, and then they'll put the Euros back till 2021. So you're going to have to get the season started pretty quickly in order for even next year's Premiership to finish, in order all the leagues in Europe, in order for that to take place. So I don't think any. I mean, we're still in lockdown at the moment, so do you know what I mean? So I don't even know where you would go from here to even think about starting to play matches.
Jimmy, I take it from what you're saying that you were pretty content with the League One season ending on that points per game basis that obviously determined the final positions.
Yeah.
We'll move on to reconstruction then. Obviously, it was announced yesterday that the League Two teams have all decided to favour the 14-14-14 layout for the Scottish game going forward. What are the kind of thoughts on that across the board?
Can I start with this? Because
no.
Because
Callum, on you go.
What I was going to say was, I think this is the 14-14-14 is a solution, again, which just seems to mainly focus. I mean, it would help benefit Partick Thistle, but it's another one that seems to be drawn up with the intention of saving Hearts, again, which I don't think is right. Everything I talk around reconstruction seems to be about Hearts. Another thing, and Jamie will be able to come in on this as well, is the 14-14-14, the bottom four teams in League One would then be demoted to the bottom tier. Stranraer were obviously bottom and a long way adrift, but Forfar, Peterhead and Clyde don't deserve to be relegated given the seasons they've had. So I don't think it's fair to send them down. The other thing with this plan is as well, it cuts out, well, there's been a lot of talk about Brora and Kelty and they've won their leagues and we can't leave them out of the argument. It cuts them out. And what I find bizarre as well about the League Two clubs backing it is I've heard the Elgin chairman, Graham Tatters, at the weekend saying that he wasn't in favour of any reconstruction. So I find it strange if you're not in favour to then back this. And if Cove's backing it as well, I think that's a bit odd given that realistically you don't perhaps see the progress you should for them having had a good season and winning the league.
Yeah. I think when the whole point in this initially was that no team would kind of suffer through the reconstruction, but obviously, as you said, Callum, it will affect ourselves, Clyde and Forfa. So it is demoted. So I don't understand how you can have Anne Budge, chairman of Hearts, chairing a committee. So there's a conflict of interest there straight away. And with the greatest of respects to, like, say, teams like Hamilton and Alloa, do you think there would be as much uproar for reconstruction if Hamilton were relegated and Alloa was relegated from the Championship? I don't think there would be, but because it's Hearts and Partick Thistle, unless I don't know. I don't know how Scottish football works, Callum. Unless there's been an agreement in place before all this has came to light about the league votes and stuff like that, I've no idea. But it's just it's very coincidental.
I don't think anyone knows.
But I don't know if you can. I don't know if you're allowed to broadcast that, because then you'll have people on the phone. But
they don't scare me.
Smoke and fire.
Thirdy, do you have anything to add on that?
Well, I was just going to say, I think Jamie's hitting the nail on the head here, and there's an element of the bigger clubs are being looked after in this new arrangement if it comes to pass, and it's, well, we're going further down the leagues, we don't need to worry about them so much, and I just, that leaves a sour taste for a lot of people. If we're talking about decisions needing to be made for the good of Scottish football as a whole, then this is failing on every level, no matter how you look at it.
Jamie, on a personal level, are you happy with how Peterhead as a club handled, I know a few of your teammates have said that the club handled it well, the playing squad handled it well, the need to sort of discuss pay and things like that because of this situation, where you think things were generally handled in the right manner?
Yeah, of course, the chairman, the manager, everything was done through Scott Brown and Simon. Scott Brown's a PFA, he's on the PFA council. So Scott pretty much kept everybody in the loop regarding PFA protocol and stuff like that, and the club as well. It was pretty self-explanatory. The club kind of came to a deal with the boys. I think most of the boys agreed to it. And then kind of the portal for being followed and stuff wasn't even set up. So I think it changed every couple of days, and then it came to the boys will get 80% and stuff like that through the follow scheme. So it's like anything else. I mean, you've been at a club that long, and it's not just affecting the club, it's the tea ladies, the kit men, everybody at the club. You want the clubs to survive, so it was in everybody's best interest to be following. As soon as the email came through, all the boys just signed it and sent it back. And that's, I think there's only four boys in contract next year, so we don't even know if we're going to see each other again. As I said, we can't even get up a house at the moment to go and socialise, never mind play football, so we don't know what's going to happen.
Do you fear you won't get a chance to play at your 36th birthday, Jamie?
Well, I would keep playing as long as my legs would let me, honestly. I would even get down there. I still enjoy playing football. But it was just a case of, right, is my game against Falkirk going ahead tomorrow? Everything's going on, yes it is. And then all of a sudden it's like, right, we can't go training Tuesday. Or with the social distance, right, we kind of travel up to each other, and then it's a case of, right, we kind of get anywhere to train, and then all of a sudden, then that's it. The lockdown, you're not allowed out. Like a lot of the boys, we're used to training twice a week. We a night up in Dundee now, and a night in Hamilton. So you get used to keeping yourself fit, being around all the other boys, in the games. Obviously, on a Saturday, it gives you something to look forward to, something to look forward to. I mean, at the moment, I think most of the boys will be going out and doing their runs and stuff like that, but you're doing it with kind of no end in sight. But we now know, like, the league's finished, we're being followed, and for a few years, that might be either seeking a new club or maybe getting off another year. No one knows. Managers don't know. The leagues don't know. So everybody, I don't even know what's going to happen with boys that have maybe got 2 and 3 year deals at other clubs. Are they going to be honoured? Because the follow scheme ends in May, June. So are clubs going to have budgets to pay players? Are players going to get made redundant? No one knows. It's, at some point, questions will have to be answered. That's not just at lower league clubs, but you're talking about Premiership clubs as well. Mm-hmm. It's not always a bottomless pot of money.
You spoke about the training and things as well, Jamie, and I mean, is there a sort of mental well-being aspect to it as well? Because I know for a lot of, especially part-time guys as well, you're training twice a week and you're gaming a Saturday, and it's good for you, isn't it, sort of being in about each other and a bit of banter, you know, and travelling up together, and I suppose you probably miss that, do you, once it's gone?
Oh, you do, you miss, I mean, you miss getting a pasta cookie and stuff like that in the bus. It's just stuff that you're used to. It is, but that's what it's like. It's a good bunch of boys, and they carry on, and then it's time to be serious and getting just usual stories and banter and stuff. And then, like, I'm quite fortunate. I've got my two kids, so they keep me busy and all of that. But no, everybody could be in a different mental state, and I know kind of mental, your mental kind of health. And it gets highlighted quite a bit in social media and stuff like that at the moment. And I think it is important, just as much as your body, your mind is fit. And I can understand people that might be in a situation where they are struggling. But even in the WhatsApp group, the manager and Davey have been on the phone with Scott, just saying, if everybody's struggling, give the manager a phone, give Davey a phone. And as I said, if anybody's got any worries or issues, then they're only a phone call away.
Genuinely good to hear that.
That is, it's good to hear. I mean, I know the boys are just usual thumbs up emoji. We're all good. But again, it gives somebody that, like, a line that if they do need to maybe need a wee bit of reassurance and speak to the manager, whether it's finances, whether it's maybe worries at home or something, I don't know. But there's always a line of communication. So I can only speak for, obviously, for Peterhead, but none of the boys, I think, have got anything to worry about. I'm sure the club will do their best for them if they can. Not just as players, but as people. So it's quite refreshing to know what's happening. You do give you updates.
Okay, Jamie, so are you now ready to give us who you think is your most talented teammate of all time?
You've run out of time. You need an answer. Come on.
I don't know. Honest. No, I'll just say Rory, because you never hear the end of it if you don't say it.
Never a truer word spoken.
Is he checked in the post as well?
No, I'll just get a picture took beside his statue at Balmoor, because he's adamant he's going to get a statue or a stand named after him. So, ability, he's probably one of the best goal scorers, I'll give him that, but ability wise, I can't even think, honestly. Just like with Paul McGowan, he had ridiculous ability.
Very diplomatic. Okay, well, that I think concludes after what's been close to an hour, this episode of Northern Goal. Thank you very much, Jamie, first of all, for coming on today.
No, you will.
And obviously, thank you to Callum and Paul as well. Much appreciated.
No bother. Thanks for putting up with us for another week, Ryan.
Okay, so if you want to ask us anything, make a point, or generally berate us over this week's episode, please get in touch by email at northerngoal@dctmedia.co.uk. We'll be back next week. Might be a guest, might just be enough happening in the chaos that is Scottish football for us to just talk about that. But continue to look out for Northern Goal every Tuesday. It's much appreciated. If you have enjoyed listening, please subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And finally, stay safe out there this week.
Hope you loved the episode. And if you did, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to pick up your copies of the Press and Journal and Evening Express every day for the best football writing and analysis in the North.